I'm Evan DeWald, and I am joined by Tara Lindsley, and we are the voices behind the Unpacked podcast. On the Unpacked podcast, one of the things we love to do is talk about life and storytelling, and sometimes life gets messy and vulnerable and all those things. So we have conversations with counselors, with psychologists, with industry leaders, storytellers, and just regular humans that are making a difference in the world.
Yeah, and we're just hoping to grow and reflect and heal together. So you can find our podcast anywhere you subscribe to your podcasts. New episodes come out every Thursday. Enjoy.
Make sure to like and subscribe.
See you there. Hey, Tara.
Hey.
How are you today?
Good. I'm glad we're recording.
My voice is already a little bit hoarse.
We've recorded an episode.
To just us.
Yeah.
Lots of talkie-talkie today. Wow. It was a lot of talkie-talkie this weekend.
Was it? How come?
It was a wild week. Went out to Saskatoon, Saskatchewan.
Oh, luxurious.
Yeah, you're really looking at a world traveler here. Otto had a soccer tournament.
Mm.
It was pretty fun. It took me back to my youth pastor days.
How come?
Well, we took a bunch of kids with us. So we were the chauffeurs, so we had three extra boys with us, including Otto, so four guys in the back of the minivan.
Smelly.
It was a bit smelly. Oh, man, they're funny and exhausting. Yeah. And, like, all of the things. Okay, so a couple things happened on the trip. So before we get to the soccer, one of the kids in the van is a jokester. And it reminds me lots of myself. Like, very loud, always trying to be funny, getting carried away, all those kind of things. Anyway, at one point, we're driving in Saskatoon. It's dark, and I hear a siren, and so I'm like, oh, shit. That's what you say.
Of course.
I look in the rearview mirror, and there's red and blue lights flashing in the rearview mirror. It's this kid. He has found an app that changes the color of the screen on his phone and makes a siren sound.
No way.
So he's in the back in the dark holding this thing. I did tell you what, he kind of got me.
Especially, was he in the back
yeah,
of the van?
Yeah, very back of the yeah. van holding this thing up. I was like, oh my gosh. And then, sure enough, had me. I don't like to be had.
So what did you do?
I know I was had. I had to confess it. That's what you do. When somebody gets you, you got to say, oh yeah, you got me.
Yeah, but did you feel the need to get back?
I should have, but I didn't really.
Oh, look at you.
I had a little bit of compassion for this kid. So you know what? Some of these kids are almost 6 feet tall. Like Otto's just about 6 feet tall.
Yeah, I know.
He's 14. They got feelings.
Of course they do.
The kind of feelings that they don't recognize or know. They're there. You know, like that's probably true of a 49-year-old as well. But in this case, you can see them just getting so tired and all those kind of things. And they just get more and more emotional. And yeah, anyways.
I believe
they probably were more and more tired because they wouldn't go to bed.
Oh, that was the other
that
exciting.
Was the, yes, the youth pastor thing. I was like, oh my gosh, it's 12:30. They're still trying to play soccer in the hallway.
So who had to tell them to go to bed?
Well, we all took a try. Security eventually came up. Incidentally, Otto has confessed to me this happened.
Mm-hmm.
Security, I guess, came up at one point during the day. Happened to talk to Otto immediately upon reaching the top of the elevator. And he was like, what room are you staying in? And Otto gave them a different room.
Nice. Smart kid.
I was like, what?
He should. If he...
Yeah, he was quick.
Yeah. And also, had he done anything wrong at that point?
I didn't ask him. I didn't want to know. I was like, just don't ask. If I don't ask, I don't have to know.
That's good. That's a good strategy.
I don't think they're doing anything necessarily bad, but I don't think they were being necessarily quiet either.
No teenagers are when they're staying in a hotel.
So yeah, we were that team. We were that team that you hate when you go to a hotel and you find out you're on a floor.
Yeah.
That was us.
Right.
All right. So soccer, though.
Okay. I just had to say, I have like total sympathy for that team because I also was people on those teams.
Yeah.
Like I definitely have been on those teams that cause so much chaos.
It's a bit of a rite of passage.
Yeah.
Yeah. It for sure is. So, you know.
It's a balance.
And you're running around with your club's, you know, name. On your hoodie and your pants and the actual number of you as a player on your back. It's
yeah,
like,
you're like a walking billboard.
Yeah. Like it doesn't take much to be like, hey, number 13 was running in the hallways. Anyway. And he's on the field, he's a bit of a villain.
Yeah.
And he's a good defender. And so, he gets in plays where where people get knocked down and it gets rough and some of that kind of stuff. And you're always, you know, as a defender, he's almost always taking away somebody's opportunity to score. So everybody's watching.
Right.
So he ends up being a villain. But I will say this, champions, first place.
That's amazing. That's so exciting.
Yeah, they went out there to Saskatchewan, kicked them Saskatchewanian butts. That's what they did.
And you weren't conflicted at all? Aren't you from there?
I am from there and no.
Yeah, it was great.
No. It did cross my mind. I was like, you know, in Saskatchewan, two parents could get in a fight, you know, because we're, you know, this is what small town is like. And there was a part of me that comically was like, hey, guess what? I'm from Saskatchewan too, so I got no problem throwing hands.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, if we're going to solve this, let's solve it a good old Saskatchewan way.
Were you wearing jeans?
I was. I had a leather jacket.
Uh-oh.
I was ready.
Oh, no.
Yeah, other than, you know, the fact that I got, like, tendonitis and bursitis in my shoulder. And, you know, I'm almost 50. You know, a few of those kind of things maybe going against me on that one.
Right. So you had to make some, like, wise choices.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there you go. It was, like, it was fun seeing some of the plays. And then I saw, like, Kristen runs the social media, so I follow it. So I did get to watch the live of the penalty kicks. So that was fun. So it was exciting. I'm not really a sports person, but people I love playing sports, I'm into. Yeah. So I was watching it, and Theo and I were watching some of the videos, and he was like, I want to do that butt tackle.
The butt
tackle. Or the butt slide is what he kept calling it when he watched videos of Otto. I was like, yeah, that's what we're calling it now. I think that's what we're calling it now.
They should start calling it that for sure.
I think
instead of the slide tackle, it's like the butt tackle. Butt slide?
Butt slide or butt tackle? I don't know. Both work.
No, it was fun to watch him win. And I am so excited about the people that are coming on today.
Are you? How come?
Oh, classic. People don't realize that we don't just watch, or we don't just do our own podcast. We are podcast fans.
Yes.
And we listen to a lot of podcasts.
Yeah, like a lot. We have regular ones, but then we're always like kind of on to new stuff.
Yeah. And so these are like regulars on my podcast list.
Yeah, no, they are. Which, interestingly, you are really good at this. When we're like thinking about doing a series or talking about something new we want to learn, like, you find new podcasts to listen to.
Yeah, well, you send me some and then I listen to more.
Yeah, that's true.
Around
them. I don't think that's how this happened, though.
No.
I think you found them.
Yeah, somebody suggested it to me. I don't know.
Oh, didn't Kevin?
It might have been Kevin.
I don't know. Let's give him credit.
Let's give Kevin credit. He shows up in this episode.
Yeah.
Or maybe he shows up in theirs.
I don't know.
We're going to be on theirs. Yeah. Here's the thing. This intro is going off the rails here. So you have people whose voices have contributed to the way that you think and the way that you, even the language that you use. And for me, I started listening to like these two guys. I haven't said their names yet or the name of their podcast yet. Not quite a year ago, but almost. And then I consistently listen to them when their episodes come out. Mm-hmm. Very, very excited about having Two Bottles Deep join us. And these are two incredibly caring people. They love people. And when I listen to them, they're funny. They're having a great time. They're two gay men who are really trying to bridge the gap between the straight world and the LGBTQ plus world. But they're really two people who love others and are curious. And they don't hold back. They listen. They're good listeners.
Yeah. I was thinking, like, they're good at disagreeing.
Yeah.
Like, they're okay to hold someone's opinion that's different than theirs. Yeah. And they want to learn about it. It's something they model really well.
Very, very well. And then they've got what I would hope Unpacked has as well, is this, like, a good mixture of, like, humor, but also learning and curiosity and some of those kinds of things. So I resonate a lot with them, and they both just make me really laugh. Mm-hmm. Both of them, even though one of them, Philip, is actually a stand-up comedian.
I know, it's so fun.
So he does some of that.
Yeah.
So yeah, looking forward to this episode with them. They kind of came on and talked to us just a little bit about their stories and their lives and what it was like for them coming out. They have very different stories that way.
Yeah, and their podcast.
And their podcast, right? And they shared a little bit just about all of that. And we've been all about that via our Shoulder to Shoulder series and some of the stuff that we were talking about. And really, that's when we reached out. And I do remember
Yeah, me too.
I reached out. I think it was me. I was like, I'm going to just send them a quick DM and see. And they responded almost immediately. And I was so excited. I phoned you.
I know. You were so happy.
I was
happy.
Like, oh, yes, they responded. They said they want to be on. And here they are. Like, these would be people if I showed up in Nashville. I'd be like, I think I know some guys that I could go for supper with or dinner with.
Or brunch.
We could have or brunch anywhere. And these guys would be not only a fun conversation, but also an enlightening conversation.
Yeah.
With. And so, yeah, I hope that you enjoyed this episode with Two Bottles Deep. Oh, Tara.
Yeah.
Okay. I've been waiting a long time for this.
I know, me too.
I am beyond excited. Okay. We got Philip and Wes from Two Bottles Deep.
It's a podcast you listen to.
I listen to these guys. I kind of feel like I met some famous people.
I know. I was thinking that. Like, I listen too, but not as much as you have.
Like, every week. I listen all the time.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. I've got fell behind you in the last, like, 2 weeks. How are you guys doing?
Hello.
Hi.
From Nashville, Tennessee.
Music City, and neither of us can sing.
Oh.
Well,
I can sing a little.
Do people want to listen or when you sing? Or is it, oh, no.
That's the issue I'm having. Oh,
It is fun to live in Music City, though, because you're surrounded by all this talent. And then you're like, what do I have going?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like famous podcasters. There's people in Canada listening to you.
Oh, my God. I know. Now we want to come visit.
Yeah, you should definitely come. We have cool stuff here. We're in Western Canada. So we're over by the Rockies. Like, the Canadian Rockies are, like, legitimately right here.
We should probably maybe not encourage them to come, like, in the next 2 months, because it's, like, the coldest it ever is.
Yeah, you might want to stick
around. And darkest, so.
We're booked solid.
These yeah. 2026 is looking not great. Work. It's so great to connect with y'all.
Yes. Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah. It's awesome to have you guys too. And to kind of hear a little bit of your story and some of that stuff. But I will say this is a little caveat to tonight. I'm afraid.
Why?
I'm afraid because these guys are funny.
I know. They've been cracking us up for like 20 minutes already.
And I'm fighting. I really want them to like me.
Oh, yeah.
Which means I'm going to try really hard to be funny, as funny as they are. So that's going to be tricky. You'll have to keep us in line.
Okay, I'll try.
Hey, we are thrilled you're here. More than just the humor, more than just any of that other stuff, but what you are about. And I have to, like, I got put onto you by some other friends because we were doing our own, like, at Unpacked, we were doing a shoulder to shoulder series, which I'm hoping we can talk about in a few minutes. And even when we join you guys on yours, but from the moment I pressed play and listened, I was like, oh no, I already like the way they talk about things. And, so that initiates for me the desire to hear story. Cause we're on Unpacked. We're all about story. We just really think that stories are like the context for all forms of growth and transformation. What are the facts about you? But maybe more importantly, it's like, is there a story or is there a context that you can give us to help us understand? Like, how did you become Philip? How did you become Wes? Like,
so how much time do we have? My story
like
is
3-4 hours, something like
that. I usually do about 4 hours, just nonstop talking.
Okay. We'll settle in.
I was born in a really small town in Tennessee, Arrington, Tennessee, on a farm. I was raised on a sheep and cow farm. My dad's a veterinarian. Mom was a stay-at-home mom. I had two brothers. I, for everything I can remember, had a wonderful childhood. There was nothing that I thought, looking back, was bad. I was part of a super religious church that I didn't realize was not for me until later. So looking back, it's hard for me to say, people are like, oh, it must have been awful. I didn't know that what I was living in was not good for me. And it wasn't that it was bad. It just wasn't good for me. So that was the struggle that I had, is as I start realizing that I'm different, I didn't have any concept of what gay was. I didn't have a television growing up. I didn't have access to any of that. So
you're gay?
I mentioned that at the beginning. I know it's a little off-putting at times.
Yeah. But, oh, he's talking.
Yeah. I'm wearing a marble countertop.
I only wanted to interrupt because I just realized we didn't say that. That's part of the premise of Two Bottles Deep and kind of what you're trying to do. So we'll get to that.
Yeah, I didn't. I started realizing it when I was coming out, or knew that something was different about me, and I knew I wanted to tell people. And when I would tell people, I would get the same answers, and it was like, "You can't be that. You can be happy, but you can't be that." You can't, you know, maybe God's challenge for you is to be celibate your entire life. Maybe that's your challenge, because we're all given a challenge. And it made sense to me because I know God will do that. You know, I was like, okay, well, that makes sense. But it kept coming up that I was like, I can either be happy or religious. That's what I kept coming up with. Like, how can I be both? So I came out to a preacher in our church. And essentially that's what he said. He wasn't hateful. He just said, this is God's challenge for you. And I quit / was told I couldn't partake in that church anymore. I could come, but I could never partake in things, which I was like, well, what's the point of going to church if I can't partake in anything? So I was non-religious for many years as I came out and went through a phase of hatefulness of myself, hatefulness of my church that I grew up in, hatefulness of things that I just assumed were not good for me. And then I started realizing that, after I had love and my family actually handled it better, that I was part of the problem in a sense, that I could dive deeper into my own issues, figure out what I needed from a religious standpoint. And then many years later, I ended up moving back to Nashville. After I got out of a long-term relationship, I was somewhat religious and just ready to meet people and see if I could find love again. And that's when I met Wes. And
we're in love.
I assume he fell in love with me when he first saw me.
Who wouldn't? Yeah, absolutely.
You've seen the face.
Yeah, great.
It's stunning, honestly.
Yeah. It's hard to pay attention right now. What's happening? Honestly.
But I met Wes, and we had a friendship for a while, and he had mentioned many times about doing a podcast. And I was like, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. You are an idiot. Because no one wants to hear what I think about things. I'm not an expert on my community. I'm an expert in the part of the medical field that I do for a living, but I'm not. But he kept running his mouth about it. I was like, God, it's just insufferable. And I agreed to do it. And it was like, everything worked. Every single thing just seemed like it just flowed perfectly after that. That's how I got here. It's like, I came from not feeling safe and not knowing what was going on religiously to now knowing that I know my place. I know where I am in the world. I'm grateful for Wes and for him making me do this. And we've grown exponentially in ourselves, in our heads, in our hearts. That's what I'm most grateful for, is that I have grown as a human because of this. And I'm not gaining notoriety for that piece. I'm gaining knowledge of other people and how to interact with them and how to love them. And so Wes is partly responsible for that. I mean, not a ton. He's not, let's not get ahead of ourselves.
No, but you know, like Philip, I was raised in a really, really small town in Illinois, like 4 or 5 hours south of Chicago, closer to St. Louis. So that's a very rural area. When people say, oh, you're from Illinois, how's Chicago? Like, I'm not from Chicago. I'm from a town of 5,000 white people. And if you had a jacked up F-150 and a Harley, you were doing good.
Yeah.
So there was no way in hell I was coming out in a town like that. And I knew in fourth grade. But like Philip, like I didn't grow up religious, but I still didn't know what gay was. Like, I remember my first crush, much like we all probably remember our first crushes. But I knew there was something different. I'm like, oh, maybe I like him because we both have four wheelers, you know, or go-karts and all that. But I didn't know what it was. So growing up, like my dad's cousin back in the day died of AIDS. So then it was in my head, if you're gay, you're doomed. So went to college, joined a fraternity. And then there were always the jokes and the stereotypes, like people would say homo and faggot and stuff. And it wasn't towards me. It was just like passing each other in the hallway. And it was that hyper masculine college experience, which I love. Fraternity was the best part of my life. Fast forward, when I came out, a lot of those guys emailed me, and it was like 6 years after college, being like, we are so sorry, sending me messages, apologizing. So it was never meant that way. But in college, I still dated girls, and I knew, but I was trying to change because I wanted the family and all that stuff. Because that's what, again, nothing with religion, but that's what, you know, my grandparents did, my dad, my mom and dad did, my brother did, my cousin did. I was the only one. So I was kind of like the black sheep of the family. Great childhood. My parents, you know, love me. They've always loved me. They've never wavered. But there was a really tough time when I came out of a few years of, you know, what were your brother's friends think? What is the community going to think? And then it was a lot of navigating. Well, you never asked me how I'm doing. This is where we want to help people. And Philip's one of literally the funniest people I know. And I'm like, okay, I love just learning from people and talking to people. And we didn't want to be that far left or far right. We just wanted to have good conversations, spotlight people's stories, whether they're gay, straight. We've had breast cancer survivors on. I mean, we just talk about everything. And that's just building a community. Because once you know something about someone, you know, you have that connection. You tend to like them a little.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm notorious for throwing in added questions. So forgive me if this was one of the things. We just finished a whole series on, we called it Shoulder to Shoulder. It really is about inclusion and belonging within the context of the church, but it's really about inclusion and belonging. We did an episode. I have a daughter who is pansexual, and so she arranged for a bunch of her college friends to tell their stories essentially with us. And one of the things when we went down to the college and did the interview, one of the things that came very apparent to us, because we were hearing coming out stories, was how heavy the weight of managing, not just getting over the fear of telling loved ones, but more the weight of like bearing the weight of how they would respond to it. Was that something that you experienced?
I've always said, and I've talked about this on our podcast, that my mother taught me a lesson that is one of the most invaluable things that she could have taught me. I came out, I was not living in Tennessee at the time, and I came out over the phone because I was kind of forced out, not in a really humiliating way, but just because I had a bunch of credit card debt. I had paid for therapy using credit cards and forgot that old dad was signed on to the old credit card. Mm. And I didn't pay because I was too busy living. And he got a call. And so the conversation started there. And once I came out, I had been wanting to come out for so long that I was coming out. I was like, we're doing this. We're having a parade through the kitchen. I will make you look at pictures of men that I've dated. Like, this is, I am ready. And I kept getting pushback. And I was like, why are my parents being so not willing to discuss this? And my mother set me down and she said, you have literally been dealing with this in your head for years. And you have given us a week to handle this. You have got to be more patient with us. And it's like a light bulb came on. And that's what I continue to teach when people ask me, when people write in, or, you know, young gay people asking, what's the best mm-hmm. advice? It is, be strong in your convictions, but also know that the people you're telling deserve a little bit of time, not forever, but they need some, give them some grace, give them some time to think through how they're going to respond. I think for me, I say that my coming out story wasn't bad, but expected. I expected them to be upset with me. I expected my father to offer conversion therapy to me in a way that wasn't hateful. It was the only thing he knew that could help me because he saw it. And I even saw it a little bit as like an issue. So my big advice, when you come out, say your piece, give them time.
And I always looked for everybody else's acceptance, and I never accepted myself. I never said I'm gay. I said I liked guys. I wouldn't say I'm gay. I didn't say that for 2 years. Mm-hmm. I would not say those two words after I told my parents, February, I think, of 2009. I didn't say I was gay until like 2011. But I had come out to people. And then I was like, is that okay? And now if like, if I introduce you, I'll be like, oh, this is my partner, you know, and not ask for that. And we had a guest on named Anne Marie, and she said it really good. And I wish I had this advice back then, but she said, you're not coming out, you're letting people in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's so great. And I wish I had that advice. So I hope if somebody hears that they could let other people know that you're letting people in. Because most of the time when you tell people, they're so honored, especially in all our era, right? It's so different now, 10, 15 years later. People are so honored to say, to be a part of your journey. So it's not anything scary. But you have to accept yourself. I mean, there were so many years of just shame and guilt of I'm the only one different in my family, and I'm the only one not reproducing, and I'm the only one that's moved away from Illinois. And there was just so much shame and guilt. I still had fun all those years, but I wish I would have focused on myself a lot more than worrying about what other people thought. I never chose to be gay, but I finally chose to be happy.
Hmm. Yeah, you both have said that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. Yeah. But what shifted for each of you? Like, there's a freeing sense in the way you talk about kind of later in your stories.
I think for me, it was giving myself permission to be happy, which sounds really strange, but religion, a lot of the times, very like, I don't know, it's just like, I was so heavy growing up and it was so important. And I never knew that I could approach religion or life in general in this very like happy, life is great, God's wonderful, everybody's full of love. It's more of a don't do this, don't do that, don't do that. Try to get into heaven. Do everything you can to get into heaven. Please do not mess up your route to heaven. And that was my ongoing thought, was I'd do something, I'd be like, I mean, the first time I had sex with a guy, I was convinced. I was like, I am hellbound. This is it. And I prayed and prayed and prayed for days. I'll never do it again, God. I'll never do this again.
You did it again. But you felt that way again.
Yeah.
I felt that
and
way
it
over
just keeps
and over.
Going. And I'm like, this is not normal for us to be suffering for two people who are agreeing to do this and it works for them. Like, what's the issue?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And why would God be so angry with that? Right? Like your eternity would be on the line.
I viewed it as everybody else was just living their life and having fun and no repercussion. But then I just felt I couldn't do anything. And what changed for me was Steve Jobs said, your time is limited. So stop living life for other people. It's a great quote. Yeah. Your time is limited. Mm. Stop living life for other people. And that was like, you know, because I was still, both of my grandfathers died in 93. I knew three great grandmas. They had all passed. Both of my grandmas were still alive, but I'm like, oh, what would grandpa think? What would, you know, what would Uncle Larry think? It was always about other people. It was never about myself. And everybody has so much to give to the world, but if you're not authentically yourself, you may think you're helping. I always helped with charities, but all the stuff I did, it was super great, but I just ignored myself. It was just to keep me busy and away from home.
Yeah. Okay. So you meet. Where did you meet?
Yeah. I was modeling. I was on a runway.
Oh, and stop.
So it was a Gucci show.
No, the gays love brunch. The gays love brunch. Like that is a huge thing here. I'm sure it's everywhere, but in Nashville, it's the thing to do. You go brunch, right?
Okay.
And I don't remember, you know, in the gay world, you it's small, so you run into people often, but you may not know them. So I know. I'm sure he remembers seeing me. I barely remember seeing him. We went to a friend's, a mutual friend's brunch together once and hung out. And then we also were at a bar. And during those two times, I remember thinking, this is becoming more than just an acquaintance.
Yep.
And he's got an infectious laugh. I got a great sense of humor. So the combination of us at a bar always drew attention because we were just laughing. And so it started over alcohol and having fun.
Yeah.
And then kind of has gone from there to much more serious.
One of my coworkers, Jason, who we've had on the show a few times, was like, you got to meet this Philip guy. I can't even explain him. And then we met and we've been friends ever since.
I absolutely love it. I love it. And so the podcast, we have a similar story.
one person wants to do a podcast and the other wants to resist doing a podcast. And almost like when you were talking about Philip, it's like for the same reason, it's like, who would want to listen? Right. And it's such an interesting thing. And that is a little bit of our story. What was it for you guys? What was the, like, was there a moment when you're like, okay, so you want to do a podcast? Like you just want to laugh together with me on this recorded thing? Was it about entertainment or was it really like, no, I have something important I think we could do together?
I always wanted to do one, but then I wasn't a podcast listener. So I'm like, God, what? Similar. I'm not an expert on this. Kind of like Philip said earlier, I could talk about my industry all day long and bore everyone to death about real estate and price per square foot and all that stuff. But we just wanted to make a difference in our community and get speaking roles and just hopefully bring some light to it and show that we are, even though we're in the gay community, we can be different. We can have different views, political views we may not understand, but we wanted to learn about other people. We started recording in my closet. We went back into the closet and because it's just our living, we didn't have a nice studio like we have now. And so, yeah. And then our friend Stacia is like, you guys have really great banter when you're two bottles deep. So that's because I, you know, loved wine and whatnot. So, yeah, this is where we're in season three. And it just kept going. But then people started writing in. And I don't know, you know, once you get those emails and people keep commenting, and then it's people that you don't know that are commenting, is I'm like, oh, okay, we'll probably have 100 views. You know, our friends will listen to it a couple times. So we're like, let's do a season. And then it just kept going and going and going.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. And you start to realize you are getting that voice that you...
From parents whose children are gay and their husband don't like their kids. I mean, that's deeper than what we can help, but it's like at least hopefully starting conversations. We've had the first trans person in the state of Tennessee to ever get on the ballot, and she got elected. You know, she told her story. She was born a male, transitioned later in life after serving in the military and running a power plant. And it's just such great, great stories. So once those stories started coming, because sometimes it's week to week, you're like, uh-oh. You know, we're not Oprah. We don't have a team around us, right? Yeah. And y'all may feel this too. You're like, oh, what's the next thing?
Yeah.
You know? And then listener mail and stuff like that just spawns new topics and new conversations. And we just want to learn about people.
Yeah.
But we start getting feedback from people about, you know, so-and-so's coming out. I appreciated this episode because it helped me with this. And I'm like, wait a minute. There are strangers listening. And I started realizing how important it was that what we are presenting to our listeners is done in a way that's respectful, kind, all of that. So then by season two, we're doing, you know, weeks of research to get ready for a particular guest so that we can hit the ground running. And that's when I was like, this is serious. This is like, I want to make sure that my audience knows about this from this gun control episode. I think starting off for me, it was like, this is fun. We're in a closet. I get to drink Pinot Grigio. Yes. And then people are listening and reaching out to us. I'm like, this has got the ability to really affect people. And then it becomes a responsibility.
Hey, Tara.
Hey.
Hey, did you know that at the heart of our city lies an organization that is making a profound impact on the lives of women in need? The Chesmere Women's Crisis Society is more than a nonprofit. It's a beacon of hope, a sanctuary of support. They provide resources like counseling, legal aid, vital supports. They're not just meeting the immediate needs, but they're meeting the long-term needs. They're igniting a spark of empowerment in every woman they serve.
I love that. And it doesn't stop there. This organization understands that true change happens when communities come together. And when we stand up to harm and injustice, we're not just building a better city here, we're building a safer, more compassionate future. But here's the truth. Healthy people make healthy communities. And it's our responsibility to create those safe spaces with dignity and respect.
It's more than just about helping people. It's about healing people. It's about prevention. So let's get started. Let's get standing beside these people and behind these people. Let's support the Chesmere Women's Crisis Society by sharing their story, by getting involved with them and volunteering and by donating. The story continues because of you. You can learn more at cwcshelps.com.
But I'm very proud of the fact that Wes and I have combined a little bit of fun and casual playfulness with really serious topics so that people aren't afraid of coming on, because they know we're not going to try to put them in a corner and get them to say something awful. It's just like, if you believe something different than me, I want to hear it. I'm not going to try to change your mind. I just want to know where it comes from. And maybe I can be around you and not wonder, why the hell did you vote for Trump instead of me? Like, but it makes sense if I talk to you, maybe.
One of the things I would say right away when I started listening, and I don't know when, like I probably just joined on the episode that you were doing that week, you know, when I press play, you know, so I can't even remember the very first episode. What I wanted to say though was, immediately felt a sense of safety, that you actually were living out exactly what you just said. No, I want to know why. I want to know what's there. I'm not going to try to change your mind. I just want to know what's there. And for sure, curiosity came out. And I remember you said in one of your episodes, this is quite a long time ago, it was like, you know, you rambled off to letters LGBTQ plus, you know, or whatever. And you were like, so we're G. What, that's the only one we really know about. Right. And it was like, I think it was an episode on trans. And you were like, no, we don't know anything about this. We're not the experts here. We're here to learn. And for me, I just loved that. I was like, okay, they're not trying to be experts. They're trying to help understand for themselves, but also for others. And you can tell it comes through in the episodes that you do. And I love that. I love it.
Yeah. Thank you. But we had a guy early on, we had a guy who is Pentecostal listen to our show, and he emailed us. He's like, I almost didn't click on that drag queen episode. He's like, I just didn't want to. And then he's like, I'm so glad I did. And well, he did. He has unfortunately since passed. But he's like, I just never would have went to a drag show, and he probably wouldn't have went to a drag brunch, but at least he understood the story of the person we had on, Kennedy Ann, Miss Kennedy Ann. It was just hearing those stories is kind of like, wow, let's keep going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you definitely are you're good storytellers and good at drawing out the stories. One of the questions we wanted to ask you, and I don't want to put on what's happening in the States on what's happening in Canada, but I'll tell you what it feels like in Canada right now. When we talk about LGBTQ plus and inclusion and like that whole thing, it feels like in Canada, like we were a pretty liberal country. It was quite open and inclusive until the last couple of years.
And we do live in the most conservative province.
Yes. And so it's felt right. Like
a shift
has happened, and it's been disheartening. And our gay friends have said that. Have you guys sensed that?
So I have mixed feelings on it. I think some of this has been brought on by people within our community. I think our community has not done a great job. And this is a whole nother episode, perhaps, but just to kind of sum up my thoughts, the loudest person doesn't always, I mean, you may get the attention, but you don't get the results that you want. And that's what bothers me is, and Wes mentioned it earlier, you know, we get lumped into everything in the LGBTQIA plus community. But specifically for me, there's things in the trans community that are disturbing to me. And in a way that it is expecting immediate change and acceptance for things that some people are absolutely opposed to. I'm not saying trans people are wrong. I think a majority of trans people are doing everything they can to just feel as a part of a community. I think the 0.00001% of the people who are screaming and forcing issues is not the way to get it done, because it's a timing issue. We've just come from Trump, who has really rallied a base that has made it very clear that they're unwilling to change their opinions and they're unwilling to be accepting. So then how do we expect people to, that huge amount of people, to change their views by just saying, I want you to do this and this, and I need this out of you. And I want you to understand, you've got to expect my, you've got to say my pronouns right. You've got to give me my own safe space and bathroom. You've got to let me swim on everything I want to do. You've got, I get it. I understand that. I want them to be able to do all this. I just think they're doing it the wrong way. So I feel sad for our community at times, because I feel like we don't always do it right. And we're still making progress, but we're fighting against some political ideologies that are now becoming very apparent. And so that makes me even more want to have discussions so people can listen and hear me talk to someone who hates gay people, or Wes and I talk to somebody who thinks that we should burn in hell. I want to know. I want you to hear what they have to say. I want you to know why they want me to burn, because at that point, you can make a decision what you think about them, but they have the courage to tell me what they think. I respect that. I don't have to agree with you. I can still like this person. I can still be kind to this person. That's what I want people to know. Let's quit. What do you call the people that get on Facebook? The keyboard warriors. We got to stop this whole like talk shit on Facebook, go to bed and wake up the next morning shocked that you had, 50,000 responses on some, comment that you made.
Yeah, it's just a lot of fast change.
Yeah.
And we're all 90% of us we meet in the middle and we're down the middle and we have more in common than what we don't. But a lot of it's just not understanding. And even if you don't accept someone, at least have an understanding for them. Trans in sports, I'm up in the air. It's like, okay, is there research that when you transition younger and you don't have all the testosterone, female to male or male to female, can you compete with the women? There was Leah, it was here in the States in Pennsylvania, I think. She was like ranked 500th out of men, then she was the top women. She transitioned as an adult, as a collegiate swimmer. And I kind of had an issue with that. Not with her. I mean, she followed all the rules. Caitlyn Jenner will say she followed all the rules. We need to look at those rules, but that's not my community. I want to know more about it. And I think it should be fair. But I think there's just so much progress that the far right are being loud, but it's happening so fast and people want acceptance immediately. And I think I hated being in the closet for 29 years. And if I'm trans and I miss out on a few opportunities, I couldn't take a boyfriend to prom. I couldn't take a boyfriend to my fraternity formal in 2005, so there's things I missed out on. I think we just have to understand, hey, let's fight for these the right way and it'll come.
And I think fighting, I think, drums up a certain feeling and a certain, like, you think about a certain thing. For me, fighting is being honest with everybody in my life, with the patients that I treat. I cannot tell you the number of times I have lied to make sure my patient was comfortable with a gay guy treating them. And I'm like, what? Why am I doing this? I am able to reduce your pain from 10 out of 10 to 0 out of 10. I'm freaking amazing at this. Then why do I have to lie about the fact that I'm going on a date with a guy, but instead I've called her a girl so that, Jerry didn't get mad that some gay guy was, touching his arm. And so what I've found in my career is to just be honest, and people respond to, I've never had anybody get up off the table. It was just, I assumed that because everybody is not good with it, then nobody's good with it. So you have to protect yourself. You got to be safe. You got to make sure that you know the person. You can float some thumbs out. You ever seen Will and Grace? If they're like, yes, you're like, I'm gay.
Got that but, out there. Yeah.
Do you like Cher? What are your favorite artists? We do these things to make sure we're safe so that we can say things. But now it'll just roll off that, what are you doing tonight? I'm going out with, a guy I used to date and we're doing dinner. Like, okay, great. And I'm like, that's all you're saying? You're not mad? Like,
yeah, where's the fight?
I thought you're going to hit me. So fighting for me is like just keeping with it. Just keep plugging away with my honesty. And I'm not embarrassed of who I am. I'm not embarrassed of what I do.
Fighting definitely, like, it gives the impression somehow that there's some form of violence or aggression.
Yes, that's what I meant. You said it better. Yes.
Right? When really it's like, no, I'm not going to be violent or aggressive. I'm just going to actually tell you, well, this is the truth. Like, here's what I'm doing tonight. Or
it's also hard to fight with the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I think that's one of the powers of story. It's like, you know, even for me, it's like, it's very hard to argue with somebody's story. It's their experience of what, it's their perspective of the experience they had. I, even as I listen to you guys talk and share your stories, it's powerful to say, well, I waited till I was 29. When do I get to be me? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not probably not changing on this. My biggest concern is the teenagers and the kids mm-hmm. who are like, to be told at 11 that you're an abomination. What? It doesn't even say that. That's not even what that means. Mm-hmm. What's being talked about. How harmful is that?
I think in an area where I grew up and more rural areas, the biggest complaint too, and these people I've talked to are mostly Republican. They're like, yeah, it's just not like the 50s and 60s. And we can't joke like we used to joke. And I'm like, no, you can't. Like white people and black people couldn't get married. What was so perfect about that time frame? Mm-hmm. So it's that, you know, and hearing, you know, even when you're at like a family barbecue and, you know, these little kids hear adults speak. So we have to be mindful of the jokes of, you know, a little kid's like, I want a dress. And no, you can't have a dress, you sissy. Like that has, I remember shit that people have told me mm-hmm. in like the third grade that has just, that I'll never forget. So why can't we be more positive? You know, it's just like we as a culture need to get back to, and I think it transcends our community. Is just being a good person and listening and having, you know, sincerity. And when people hear my story, they're like, yeah, you've changed our way. You haven't changed. And I said, I don't know what you think I would change into. They're like, you know, leather pants, boas, drag. I'm like, that's Tuesday nights.
Right. That's not Saturday.
Yeah. You missed that show. But they just expect, you know, that I was just going to come home and be a different person. But what I love is people are like, okay, now even just talking, you know, one-on-one with people back home at a class reunion, you know, I would feel if I ever have a partner, I would totally safe with my past partner. He went home. We went to the coffee shop in a town of 5,000 people, white people. Like, and I say that because traditionally it was a very racist town. But yet we were like my old teachers I hadn't seen in 30 years were coming up, giving me hugs and would give him a hug. I mean, it was just so great that there was, if there's change there, there could be change anywhere. It felt so great. And where you're from, you know, a lot of people are like, well, that's just the way it is here. That's not an excuse for ignorance, mm-hmm. you know, and just hearing these jokes and these kids hearing this and that stays with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. Do you guys ever have moments though in your podcast? Cause you're meeting with people that you potentially disagree with or have different views on. Are there ever moments that you encounter where you're like, oh, I really want to defend something, or I feel like I need to say more, or how do you just like let the story be? Like, are there moments where you feel a little internal tension of like wanting to correct something, or how do you disagree well?
What comes to mind was, well, the Pride episode and Brittany Griner episode. We disagreed with each other. There was
we got it.
I was not a fan of pride parades because of the vulgarness and whatnot. And then you fast forward to, you know, the pride parade here in Nashville. I mean, the main sponsors are Cracker Barrel, Dollar General, Bridgestone America. I mean, all these, and it was just, it's a beautiful parade. It may not be Southern Decadence or something in San Francisco and the ones that are a little more provocative, but I mean, internally, we kind of got into it a little bit because I'm like, this doesn't represent me and my community. And he kind of brought me around to it. He's like, it's them. If you don't want to wear a thong, don't wear a thong, you know?
And I think one of the series that I want to do that I'm having a very difficult time like creating is finding people who at their core absolutely despise me or do not agree with anything that I've ever done. I want to talk to you. I want to find out why. I cannot get anybody. I found one religious woman in DC who thinks that she said, I think, you know, I do think you'll burn in hell. And I do think that this is, you know, going to be the end of you. And I would love to talk to you about it. And I sent her 3 pages of questions that I wanted to ask. And she disappeared. And I wrote back and she agreed to it. And then I don't even know if I told you this. She's like, I don't want to people to think that I'm a hateful person. And I said, that's on you, boo. Like that's if you have come up with it after reading all these questions and you think someone's going to think you're hateful because of your answers, girl, we got a problem.
Yeah. And
you need a podcast. I don't think you need me, you know? So I think it's a challenge to find people who will stand up for what they believe in. I think we've had people here who don't necessarily agree with everything Wes and I say, but because of the nature of the podcast, or you're in a studio, you know how it is. You get people talking, right. And they're like, "Oh, we love this place." Like, okay, settle down.
Yeah, just being present and trying to understand where they're coming from. I think really, you know, because it's, you know, yeah, we want the acceptance, but we have to give the grace to our guest or to someone. At a bar or a restaurant or a barbecue or whatever. It's just hearing their story and they feel heard and seen and loved, I guess, in a way, you know? And I saw this quote about not having as many opinions. We all have opinions. We all have news 24/7, but it's like, does it matter? Does that person's view affect my life? And probably it doesn't. So when you can agree to disagree and show them some grace, maybe that'll teach them something.
Love it.
Yeah.
What, I am curious. So we can maybe wrap up on this. So I am curious to know, so you guys have listened to Shoulder to Shoulder, at least some of the episodes. You've made reference to the going down to the college and listening to the students. What of the different episodes you listened to, what was helpful? What was like, what were you like, oh, say that again, please say that again? Or were there moments where you're like, you didn't say enough? I wish you'd have pushed in on that more. Just curious.
For me, the episode with Kevin was very touching. I know you do a really good job of letting people talk. And that's one thing that annoys me with other podcasts is they'll ask a question and then they immediately just start going. Mm-hmm. And it was nice to just hear him tell his story. But the thing that really got me was all he wanted was for you to bless his marriage. He just wanted to know that God was okay with him getting married. And you gave him that in a very, what seemed like simple, not over the top. There was no, you know, spotlights and loud dramatic music with Olympic fanfare. It was just a one little simple thing that changed him. And I think that's so important to know that you don't have to know all the answers. You've just got to listen to people and know what they need. And I could hear it in his voice, even when he talked about it, like he just, you could tell he was just full of love for that moment. So I think y'all do a great job. I love listening to your episodes. The one that Wes was talking about too, I think it was Coming Out You, with the university kids. It's so unique to, you know, have a bunch of different people sitting down and telling their story without interruption. And I think that's exactly what people need to hear. You mentioned stories. So I think I love what y'all are doing and I'm grateful to be on y'all's podcast.
It's an honor to be here. And just that the conversations are happening, it's a window into a conversation, right? And that may spawn someone to do, you know, more research or be like, I never thought of that because this wouldn't have happened. Yeah, we may not be famous. We may not be well known, but a lot of people are going to hear this and hear your stories and hear our stories. And just knowing that it's there, because you have to realize when we were all growing up, like you couldn't even speak it. Now people can have a microphone in their face and encourage other people. And ultimately, I think save people's lives, you know, and that's what y'all are doing. I mean, that's a big, and for you being there for Kevin and Kevin's story and Kevin coming to you. And it's just, I don't know. It's heartwarming. Just the world needs more of this than the highly politicized, no matter what side you're on, or one of those things that's going to catch a headline. this is more impactful than a 15 second clip on a TikTok.
And the other thing I think is very impactful, especially having a brother who's been in ministry, who's quit because of just the politicalness of the church, is he, and he'll admit this, he's dealt with years of anger. In the most recent episode he was on with us, he finally kind of let himself just kind of deal with it. But the listening to y'all talk too, and knowing that you were, you know, what your story is with the church, the amount of like negativity that could have affected on, like how that could have affected you and all that. I don't get the sense, even if it's true in your life, I don't get the sense that you are unhappy with church, that there are things that you wish were different. But that's actually unique. And that's really good, because I don't want to hate religion. I don't want anybody to change my mind on it. I'm very grateful for it. I'm not great at it, but I'm grateful for it. And knowing that y'all have, you know, you're still interacting with people in the churches, I think that's important, because there's so many people who turn their back on church after an incident.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, you won't let me do this. I'm out of here. No more church. Let's go. Instead, it's like, okay, let me figure out another way that I can help people. I think that's, and the fact that y'all are straight and still trying to do this for our community, that means the world to us. I mean, allies are kind of, that word is used very casually sometimes, and just, oh, they're an ally. But allies are exactly what we need to move forward as a community, and to allow us to just be a part of everybody's community and not stick out. Just like allyship is like, you don't say, hey, gay neighbor. It's just, hey, neighbor. It's not, how's your boyfriend? He's gay. It's just, how's the person you're dating? Like, how is that? You know, those things and the conversations y'all have. So I appreciate y'all doing that. It does. Means a lot to our community for that. So thank you.
It does.
Yeah, thank you. I just have one more question and then we can switch. But I just was curious,
yeah,
when
we're both single. I would move to Canada if there are any listeners.
One of them? What are you talking
any
about?
Any listeners. Sorry.
That is what I wanted to know, obviously. But also, when you were talking about Kevin's story and Evan being a part of that, and did either of you or both of you have experiences when you got to hear something you needed in some of that time when you were dealing with shame or feeling like some self-rejection or those kind of things? What was there a story or was there a person that gave you something you needed?
For me, I didn't realize how fabulous my brother was until, I mean, of course I knew how fabulous he was, but as I'm continuing to learn about my journey and all that, there was a moment when he didn't realize I was at my darkest. I mean, I was really bad off. And the conversation that we had with him, he was always very supportive and kind and loving and asking questions. But essentially he said, no matter what you are going through in this world, that there are people who are going to be here for you that you don't realize are here for you, and you won't allow them in because you've assumed that because of this journey that they don't want to reach out to these people. And I did. Like, I wasn't reaching out to mom and dad because I was depressed. I was embarrassed that I was depressed. I couldn't admit that. And then I was, you know, dating crazy people and embarrassed of that and doing drugs, like all this crazy shit. And I reached out and I'm like, I'm sad. And they were like, okay, what can we do? We don't have to agree with you 100% to still want to help you 100%. And I was like, well, that would have been really helpful to know 12 years ago when I was sobbing uncontrollably, Celine Dion's playing and all the candles are lit. I'm like, my life will never go on. So, and I think he told me then. So,
yeah.
So, yeah, that was mine. It's just like, you don't have to wait for somebody to show you that they're there for you. Most humans, if you look at them in the eye and say, I need you right now, I need something from you, they're going to say, what you got?
Yeah.
The people that were there for me, you know, I was living in Austin, Texas when I came out, And that was the first time I'd been to a gay bar because I was, you know, 15 hours from home, you know. And so those were the people, and still some of my best friends came from that time. You know, I was 29. And then here I am feeling like I'm in college again, right? So all those people were other gay people for me. And, but it was like, it was great when I came out to them, but it wasn't until I told my parents, and they were very similar. They're like, you could have told us this years ago. And it was all self-imposed that I couldn't, because, you know, you're in college. I still want to go home for Christmas break. Because there was that risk of being disowned, right? And my parents have never treated anybody poorly. They always helped the community and all that. But when it's yourself, you can't risk that. So yeah, I had a great network coming out in Austin, and I've met amazing friends here in Nashville. But yeah, when I told my family, they're like, yeah, my parents said they didn't know, but like my aunt and uncle and my cousin and my brother, like, oh yeah, we all knew. It's like, y'all could have told me. And they're like, well, that was your place to tell us. You know, and I'm like, God, I wish there was a sign. So I think I would tell someone to, you know, pick that person. When, you know, I called Steve and Kelsey. They were one of the first people I met. And before I told my family. So a lot of people were like, duh. And I thought it would be this big revelation, and Anderson Cooper would call and want to interview me. But everybody, no one was shocked, you know, but my parents were. But they were like, yeah, we would have been here for you. We feel bad. We feel sad that we did something wrong that you couldn't have told us in junior high or high school. So that made me feel sad, but it made me feel happy because I knew they were at least, you know, sincere enough and would have been there for me.
Hmm. Yeah. That's, yeah.
My wife used to, and we can wrap on this, but she started at some point, you know, a decade and some ago, she just started actually saying to our kids, like, everyone's, oh, is there like a girl you like or boy? Like, she just would say it like that.
Oh, wow. Like, yeah. That.
You know, she just would say it like, oh, like there's options. I'm just wondering if whatever. It wasn't suggestive. It wasn't like, oh, I think you might be gay. It wasn't that. It was just part of her vocabulary. She just changed her vocabulary. And I do think that created a safety in our home for our kids in a lot of ways. So it was a real gift. And but at the time I was like, we shouldn't give that. Why are you giving that option? Like, what? Is this where I was at? It kind of like, and I do think that was one of their main things, was just like this fear, you know, that was present there, to be like,
what you say when your wife says that is so huge. It is huge, because a child hearing a female who's maybe lesbian hearing, what boy do you like, over and over and over, it keeps pushing down the ability to then say, I don't like a boy. It's like, I'm expected to like a boy. Like, okay, I like the boy. Instead of, and then I have to, you don't have to choose a gender. You know, you could say anybody you're interested in. Anybody? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good way of saying
it. So I'm glad that she does that. So
yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was a real gift to our kids and our family. And yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
Hey, this, I was excited about this conversation, and you have not disappointed.
Oh, we're honored to be here.
It was so great to hear your stories and to hear you just, how you guys met, what you're about on the podcast. Can you give us like just a quick like, how can people listen to you? Give us your little like, elevator spiel about Two Bottles Deep.
Yeah. We are on Spotify, Apple, iHeart. Just search Two Bottles Deep, T-W-O, Bottles Deep, twobottlesdeep@gmail.com. And Instagram is Two Bottles Deep Podcast.
Yep.
On the Instagram handle.
And our goal is to bridge the gap between, we say, the gay and straight community. But at this point, we're just trying to bridge gaps between anybody. Any gap you find, we'll try to bridge it.
Yeah. And I'll tell you one thing, too. So many people are like, God, Nashville, it's country music. It's so conservative. A couple weeks ago, we were at a BMG party, and they're one of the big record labels here. And there was country artists, there were celebrities, there was gay stylists, and shocking, right? But it's just like, there was, everybody was there. Nashville's so inclusive. And that's the thing, what we want people to know is we don't have to just live in San Francisco or Chicago or Fort Lauderdale. Like, Nashville is one of the most inclusive cities. And people are like, they come here and they're like, wow, we had no clue. There's drag shows on Broadway, which is where all the honky tonks are. So people are very inclusive here. And that's another goal of ours is, you know, it's not all Republicans are this, all Christians are this, all gays are this, or never, or all, or always. We got to get rid of, you know, get rid of those stereotypes.
Mm-hmm. It's funny. We were in Fort Lauderdale on our way home from Haiti.
We went out
for supper and went walking on the beach with our group of people. And it is funny because I think I did actually tell my son, I was like, you know, this is one of the most super gay cities in the United States.
It is. Yeah. Be gay,
it is gay.
I don't know how they like,
I don't know how they'd have a gay
meeting. Well, maybe that's why we had such a good time there. It was super fun. Could be.
Obviously.
Hey, thank you so much for your time. We're grateful for, I know it's like been a challenge to figure it all out, and we're so happy that you've come on Unpacked, and looking forward to being on Two Bottles Deep.
Yes. Come on over.
We want to say thank you for doing this. We really appreciate it.
Oh, we love it.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for joining us. If this episode or the podcast has been helpful to you in any way, it would mean so much to us if you would take just 30 seconds to do one or all of these three things. First, follow or subscribe to the Unpacked podcast. This helps you never miss an episode, and it goes right to your device. And it helps us so more people can find it too. To do this, head to the show page on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Then just look for the follow or the plus sign and click it. It's so important to us and it would mean so much. And hey, while you're there, if you'd be willing to give us a review, preferably 5-star, and share an episode with a friend that you found helpful, we would be so grateful. We are so, so grateful for this little online community. And if you're looking for more ways to support or exclusive content, you can head to our Patreon account, and you can find that in the link in our bio. Again, thanks for listening.